Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, St. Valentine's Day. And this, of course, is the day we celebrate the death of Six of Bugs Malone's... I'm sorry, that's an Italian holiday. This is St. Valentine's Day.
And it's not the St. Valentine's Day Massacre from Chicago, either.
Right. It's the day we celebrate the love we have for those... our significant others.
Special ones in your lives.
The special ones in your lives.
The massacre comes later when she doesn't get the gift she wanted.
Yeah, right. Or you forget.
If you have forgotten, you still have time to go, but leave the house right now. But you are listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm David Wright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Because here comes the news. All following the success of OS 10 Snow Leopard for Macs in 2009, one of iOS 9's standout features will be a directed focus on stabilizing and optimizing the operating system. While stability is normally an expected component in Apple software rather than a marquee feature, the rapid pace of iOS releases and feature introductions has taken a toll on the operating system's overall performance, recently leading to numerous complaints from longtime Apple users and newer customers alike. Apple has delivered a major new release of the iPhone, iPad, and iPod Touch operating system each year since 2007, generally marketing major iOS changes as a reason to buy new devices. In 2013, Apple completely overhauled the iOS user interface. At the same time, it added new features such as Touch ID and Control Center. iOS 8 in 2014 refined the UI design, added Health and Apple Pay, while laying the groundwork for the Apple Watch. For 2015, iOS 9, which is codenamed Monarch, which is a butterfly, not a cat. Do all the iOS 9s have butterfly names?
I don't know. The code names for the iOS have been a little more underground than they were for the Mac OS.
Anyway, iOS 9 is codenamed Monarch, is going to include a collection of under-the-hood improvements. Sources tell us that iOS 9's engineers are putting a huge focus on fixing bugs, maintaining stability, and boosting performance for the new operating system rather than solely focusing on delivering major new feature additions. Apple will also continue to make efforts to keep the size of the OS and updates manageable, especially for the many millions of iOS devices owners who have 16 gig devices. It's unclear whether this might be accomplished by limiting iOS 9 support to relatively recent devices. If the iPhone 5C, original iPad mini, and fifth generation iPod Touch are discontinued by the end of 2015, all of Apple's currently available iOS devices would be using 64-bit A7, A8, and A9 processors. This could simplify iOS development for both Apple and third-party app developers. Like Snow Leopard, iOS 9 will be pitched with stability as a tentpole component, but under-the-hood enhancements will not be the only feature. Over the past few years, Apple's been working on several new iOS features, such as transit and indoor mapping mode, so we are still expecting exciting additions to be showcased on the WWDC 2015 stage as well. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is iOS 9 to have stability and optimization focus. And your choices are excellent, but iOS 8 is already perfect. Well, how nice. Does this mean iOS 8 is unstable and buggy? So, finally catching up to Android, eh? I would tell you how many we have, but I can't... I don't know what's going on there. But we know you'll have more to say about this because we know you people like to talk, so, or at least type. So, when you are done voting in the poll, slide down along the right-hand side, scroll down, and you'll see under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forums. And if you look at that, the second forum down is the show discussion, and if you click on that, the very top link will be February 15, iOS 9 to have stability and optimization focus. Right now I'm having a little trouble getting through. I don't know why that is, except, of course, the snow. But then you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, Apple has kind of coded themselves into a corner with the expectation of a new Mac OS and a new iOS every single year. And that's a heck of a schedule to try to keep to.
Well, and they were kind of forced into it because Google does it. Microsoft has been doing it, with under-the-hood fixes, but not my major releases.
Yeah, what Apple calls a new release, Microsoft would call a service pack to the old release.
Right.
And we used to joke about that when they came out with OS 10, and we had 0.1, 0.2, 0.3. When are we going to go to 11? Well, we've got 10.10 now. Which isn't a number.
You're right.
It's not numerically significant.
10.10, which is the same as 10.1,
right.
by the way.
So if we go to 10.11, which would be next.
Right.
Right. So we don't know if it's the marketing pressure for OS 10 that they have such inertia on. Will they go to OS 11? And will they get Spinal Tap on stage to do the announcement of
it? Right, exactly.
But yeah, every year coming out with a new OS and a new iOS is got to be hard for them.
Yeah. Well, you know, on the other hand, they've certainly got enough people to do all that if they want to pay for it. So.
And there's a somewhat of a common code base between them, the Unix underlying it. But we hear stories every year that Apple had to take programmers away from one to make the other.
Right.
iOS generally comes out before Mac OS, which was a little annoying last year because iOS 8 and Mac OS 10.10 Yosemite had companion features where one didn't work without the other.
Right.
So for several months, the new iOS features didn't work because we didn't have the new Mac OS.
Right, right. And those people who can't have the new Mac OS... because they've got older machines.
Yeah. Although at least on Apple's part, they're a little more forgiving in backward compatibility. The current Mac OS will run on a 2007 iMac. So they're giving you quite a few years. You probably won't like it, and you'll probably need to put in a lot more RAM.
Right.
So in fact, that's one of the things we've been seeing, is that the stated minimum RAM requirement is 2 gigabytes for Mac OS X.
They lie like Microsoft lies.
Yeah. Well, it will run in 2 gigabytes.
So, right.
You won't like it,
right.
But it will run. You really want to have 8.
Yeah, right.
If you want to run another program, too, that's a different question.
Right, right, right. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Robert from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Robert. What's up?
Hi, Nick. I just installed Zorin Ubuntu on a hard disk and put it into my machine for experimental purposes so I can learn how to use it.
Yeah.
Do you know this product?
I know of it. I don't use it.
It's advertised as a flavor of Ubuntu that makes it easier for Windows users to transition over to Linux.
Right.
And one of the big features they promote is it's got something called a look changer, which is like an app that you can make the screen kind of sort of look like Windows 7 or XP or even the Mac OS. So anyway, I'm feeling my way around this, and I encountered something that I don't know if it's a feature or a bug, and you might know this.
It's a very subtle difference between those two.
Yeah, yeah. So I open Firefox and I go to a website like yours, for example, and I go to the address bar and I drag the little icon next to the address over to my desktop. Now I have a link on my desktop to your website. Good?
Yes.
Okay. Now I take the link and I left-click my mouse, and I drag it 3 inches to the right, okay?
Okay.
And in Windows, I would have a copy. I would have moved the link. I would not have a copy. I would have moved the link.
Right.
Okay. What's happening now on this Linux desktop is I get another link. I'm making a copy, but it's not an identical copy. Rather than pointing toward the place on the internet, the HTTP colon, et cetera, address, it's pointing to a copy of the website that has been made on my hard disk. It says file, colon, three slashes, and then the local address on my computer. Okay? So in summary, I'm trying to do the simple task of moving a link to a URL on my desktop for housekeeping reasons. Doesn't let me do that. Makes me a new link to a local copy. It is
made. Yeah, that generally happens when you hold down the control key.
Not holding the control key. In fact, I tried holding the control key to see if that permitted me to do what I wanted it to do, and that doesn't make any difference neither.
Are your left and right mouse buttons reversed?
No.
So it thinks you're doing a right click?
Well, I could left. Well, you want me to do it the other way? I'll do it the other way. When I right click it, I get a context menu. The way you would expect.
Yeah. Okay. I'm thinking.
Those are absolutely the wrong answers you're giving us.
Yeah, right.
The Three Stooges used to say, I'm trying to think, but nothing happens.
I'm trying to think, but nothing happens.
That's right. I knew you'd know that.
Absolutely. Have you tried... Are you in GNOME?
I tried it in GNOME, and it was the same behavior. You can change the look at the touch of a key. I can go right over to it if you wish. Zorin look changer, GNOME 2, it says. And I just clicked it. Successfully completed changing your desktop look to GNOME 2. Okay. So I'm there now.
All right.
Is there a hotkey you set to make that control click link thing happen? Because maybe the hotkey is set wrong, and so it's not control, it's empty, and so every click is a hotkey.
I don't know about this. I'm just using it as it came out of the box.
Right. So it shouldn't. It shouldn't be an issue because you didn't use it. You're using it out of the box.
Yeah.
The reason I asked if you were in GNOME is because there's a thing you can install from your repository called the GNOME Tweet. No.
What's say again, please. GNOME what?
I'm trying to remember the exact name. It's the GNOME Tweak Tool.
Tweak Tool, yeah.
And you can change icon themes there, and I'm wondering if the icon theme you're using has an issue.
Okay, I'll have to look into this. I don't know anything about this.
Right. But that's just a thought.
Yeah.
The other thing is take a look at your keyboard shortcuts. And that should be generally off of your system menu depending on what UI you're using. But look for your keyboard shortcuts. You should be able to actually search for them.
Yeah.
And that should tell you... that should tell you how things are set up for move and for everything else. You also should... Well, no.
Because we had a customer once accidentally set capital S to be speak. So every time they were typing and they hit a capital S, something weird would happen.
Well, I'm pretty sure it's nothing I did, because in addition to putting it on the hard disk, I put a copy on a thumb drive, and I'm able to run it, I think they call it the live mode or the trial mode, like right off the thumb drive, just the way it came from the factory, with nothing, no screw-ups for me, and it's the same behavior. And I can't find anything about this on the web.
Yeah, nor can I. I'm just wondering if I can only imagine one of two things. There's a screw-up in the installation somewhere, not that you did, but that happened.
Yeah.
Or you actually did change something and don't remember doing it.
Yeah. Does the Linux you use behave like this?
No.
Okay.
No, I can move stuff all over the place.
Yeah.
I use Xubuntu, but I've also used GNOME and Mint and Gentoo and Debian and name it, and Red Hat and Fedora. And they all work just fine. So... I can only assume that it's... you're in Nautilus. That your file manager for Zorin is Nautilus.
Yeah.
So if you looked at all the... How do I look at the... I don't know how to look at the Nautilus tweaks in your system. I'm sorry.
Okay. I'll beat on it some more. I'll beat it into submission, like the Stooges said.
There you go. Let us know what happens.
All righty.
Thanks.
Bye.
All right. Well, that was unproductive for poor Robert. But you can give us a call, and we won't answer your question either. We'll be back in just a couple of seconds with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Mimi Francesco, and you. 19 minutes after the hour, Soundbites member supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Linda from Greece on the line. Hi, Linda. What's up?
Hi, guys. Happy Valentine's Day.
And the same to you.
Did you guys remember your wives or significant others?
I did. Yep. I don't know about these guys, but I certainly did. I like to sleep with both eyes closed, so I did, yes.
Okay, two questions. One, I know you got the Galaxy S5. Did I hear you say you could disable a lot of the Samsung apps? And if you can, how do you do it? I've got a friend who's got a Galaxy S4, and it's driving her nuts.
Well, I don't know if you can do it on the S4. I couldn't figure out how to do it on my old phone. I had an S3, but the S5 lets you do it. And what happens is you go into – I'm doing it right now while we talk because, you know, I did it once and now I don't remember – but you go into settings and apps. You go into the settings and you can go into applications. And there's the application manager because I've got the new version of the system, and it lets me disable certain apps, and I just disabled all of the Amazon apps, all the Blurb app, all the extra calendar cloud NFL mobile stuff that I just didn't want. And it's just a matter of disabling it. All of them were disableable. VZ Navigator, all of that nonsense.
Okay. Yeah, I think she's got that, but she wasn't sure if disabling it would create havoc on her phone.
It didn't for me, and I can always re-enable them if I actually want to.
Yeah, you're not actually deleting them. You're just disabling them.
Ah,
right. They're still on the phone. They're still taking up space, but they aren't running.
Yeah. Have you guys ever heard of WinCleaner?
Not offhand.
No,
there's
I haven't.
CC
no.
Cleaner.
Yeah, CC. C-Cleaner. There's
cleaner.
Only two C's.
There's
okay.
Two C's,
well, I
yeah.
got this on HSN, and they said what it does is, you know how sometimes you always say, use the registry cleaner?
Yeah.
Okay, well, this thing does all of that, and it also is the last thing on it, also takes a lot of the things on the start menu. You know, when you put new product on your computer, and automatically goes to the start menu, right?
Right.
Okay, well, this, what it does is, it says, okay, you really don't need this. We're going to take it off the start menu.
Huh. I have not had a lot of experience with it.
And that's something you can do yourself, too.
Yeah, well, you know, I've got it, and what's nice about it is, once you put it on your computer... You know, every year, you know, usually you have to pay a fee. Once you put this on your computer, you never have to pay for it again.
Yeah, it doesn't seem...
I mean, well, the broken links off. It takes, you know, it takes the broken links off. It takes all the things, like when you disable something or you uninstall, there's always some remnants of it later.
Sure.
It takes all that off.
No, I see that. I just don't know the product, and I would be a little leery of it. I would be a little leery of it, personally. I just don't know much about it. I'm looking at customer reviews and at Amazon and a couple of other places. Some people love it, some people hate it.
There seems to be two of them. There's WinCleaner.com and WinCleaner.org. Just to confuse you.
Well, I know. I saw it on HSN, the Home Shopping Network, and, you know, and they give it 5 stars out of 5, you know.
Well, and, so and they're known for their computer reviews.
All right. Okay. There was an app. Oh, I can't think of it now. Can't think of it now. Where it turned. I got a brand new computer. It's a touchscreen from Hewlett Packard. It's a 17-inch, and it says it can run your Android apps on it. Has anybody ever heard of that? BlueStack or something like that?
Yeah, I vaguely remember reading something about that. They have a Mac version too, so you can run Android apps on Windows and iOS apps on the Mac. Don't know anything more about it than that.
Okay.
Usually you don't have to because they make a, most companies make a native Windows or Mac version of that app as well.
I was just wondering if you guys knew anything about it.
Yeah, the product you're thinking about is called BlueStack.
Yeah,
and it seems to be not every app, but a lot of them. What's nice about it is, of course, you can open multiple windows and multitask, so you can be using two separate apps simultaneously if that's your thing. That's the only thing I know about it at this point. I've never played with it. I've never looked at reviews on it.
Okay. I was just curious. How do you love this weather?
I love this weather as long as I'm indoors.
Yeah, I know. So, yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much for your help, Linda. Gentlemen.
Have fun. Yeah, there are so very, very many programs out there. We just don't have time to play with all of them.
There's just no way we can.
Yeah. And she just caught us with a couple we've never seen before.
So usually you want to go to the more trusted magazines. Are there any left anymore? You know, PCMag.com.
Yeah.
And not... look at the reviews before you install an app, but there's problems in the whole review process that developers will create fake accounts and give themselves praised reviews, or they'll pay people for good reviews.
Or other coworkers within that company just say, "Oh, you log on and you sit there and give us outstanding reviews and everything else." And
yeah, several companies, including Microsoft, have been caught doing that. So is Apple over time so that's not good. But
or two products will have a very similar name, and one of them's good, one of them's bad.
Right.
So that's
and you
that's
yourself
awesome.
Made the point that I don't know that I'd go to HS.
And the Home Shopping Network for their computer.
Right, for the computer advice.
Reviews. One of the things I have seen on some of those shopping networks is that most of the products that they're selling so cheaply are discontinued models.
Yeah.
They're not selling them cheaply. You know, 4 easy payments of $29.95. Well, you can buy that in the store for $50 in one payment.
Another good site, though, is CNET.com. CNET's another good one.
CNET's good for reviews, but their download service, when they bought download.com.
That's what I'm saying. Just for reviews, go there.
The now, download service puts crap in their downloads.
Right. Then you can go over to another website called Major Geeks.
They do the same, though.
Yeah, but no, what I'm saying, though, is if you go and read the reviews on CNET and find out whether it's legit or not, because a lot of these, again, they're hoaxes, you know? I mean, they can sit there and say they're going to clean it up in that, but the underlining stuff that's added onto your machine, because people sit there and say, well, it's going to install this and this, and folks don't notice down in the lower left-hand corner is a decline button.
Right.
So you go to install, say, Super Anti-Spyware. All of them right now are trying to put in at least 4 other applications. You can sit there and say decline, 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 and then it'll just install the program.
But you have to read the message that no one ever does.
Yes, take the time to do.
Right, people don't. Speaking of security stuff, the stuff that is in the Security Tango is stuff that I've mostly vetted myself over the years, so... That stuff I know about. It's the rest of the stuff that I just don't know about. Also, somebody talked to me last week about rootkit removers, so I added a little bit about rootkit removers and linked to 5 known good ones.
Yep.
So that's updated. If you go to securitytango.com and click on Windows software, the last choice on that menu is rootkit removers, so that'll help.
And I found a link to on HSN for this wind cleaner, and it's a third company yet. So there's windcleaner.com, windcleaner.org, and the one HSN is selling is from zookaware.com.
Okay.
I would be very wary of Zookaware. Just who knows what they are.
Right, right, right.
And
I don't know.
Yeah, it's very difficult to know what's good and what's bad. And you look at their website and they have all these icons for their partners, their reviewers, you know, they're certified this and that. Well, it's really easy to put fake icons on your screen.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Which is why we have to try everything that...
That's right.
So we can recommend it to people.
And that takes longer than you might think. We get a lot of people say, well, how come you haven't tried this? Well, there's only so many hours a day I can actually devote to this stuff. There is a neat little company, a neat little product called WOT, the Web of Trust. And it's an extension you stick in your computer. And what it does is every time there's, let's say you go to Google and you type in, say, run Android apps on your PC, you come back with a whole bunch of links, right? Next to those links will be a little circle that's either green or yellow or red, and that tells you how many people who are running Web of Trust said, yeah, this is a good site.
Hmm.
So sometimes it's gray because nobody has...
Yeah,
and you take a look at how many people have liked it or disliked it before you know you really decide whether or not that's good. So I went to BlueStacks, for example, and it says it's excellent and for trustworthiness, excellent for child safety. There are 18 user reviews. And you should read through those before you go somewhere. Most people said it was great. One person said it was suspicious. So something like Web of Trust will at least help in terms of giving you a heads up to something.
Well, talk about sort of in this line. As I told you, a friend got a smart TV. And all of a sudden, she heard from all these other folks. So, whoa, you got to watch out. You can't get on the internet that, because then the government can then sit there and listen in on all your conversations that you're having in the house. I go, huh?
See?
How can they do that if you don't have a microphone hooked up to the thing?
Is it a Samsung?
Yeah, that was a blow up of a real story about a Samsung smart TV.
Yeah. It's not the government, it's Samsung.
Yeah.
They actually are doing that. They are gathering information from every person who has a smart TV. They're gathering when you say to the TV, you know, find Vikings and you know. And
right.
Like
they're watching data that you put in. They're not listening to conversations.
Well, they are because the handset handset has a microphone on it that you speak your commands, and those spoken commands are sent to real people to be translated and make their automatic translations better.
Hertz doesn't have the speak to.
That's the big thing. And the Amazon Fire TV has that same sort of issue where you speak your commands. The Microsoft Xbox One, any of these products that speak your commands, those spoken words are sent somewhere.
Well, yeah, but that was my point. I said you have to have a microphone. In this case, the handset would have been a microphone. But if you don't have a microphone, whether it's in the hand control or physically hooked up to the TV, they can't listen to you.
Or there might be a microphone in the TV. Yep. You really should read the manual before.
No, this one I checked.
Yeah, anything with voice recognition, where if you can speak and it does something, it's listening to you all the time.
Yep.
Even our phones. Well, the joke is, in the early Android and iOS, you had to push the button for. Now it's OK Google and Hey Siri. It's listening all the time, and you can yell OK Google or Hey Siri into a crowded room, and somebody's phone will answer.
Yep.
It can be as
that would be cool.
It can be as simple as call mom.
Works.
Yeah,
but to sit there and see how many go answer.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, we used to have that all the time when Siri first came out, and of course, so many RIT students had iPhones. Class would end, and kids would all take out their phones. It was like the June Taylor phoners. They would all take out their nobody gets that joke anymore.
Yeah.
They would all take out their phones and hit
you're dating yourself
Siri thing. Yeah. And Of course, back then, I don't know what it's like now, but back then there would be that noise. That
yeah.
bing. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, it can't be bing. Not,
yeah.
It's not bing, but it's a noise. And somebody in the room would yell out, call home. And half a dozen kids would start swearing because the phone has dialed their mother.
Oh.
Well, for our and for our protection now, Al Franken has jumped on this issue and is sending letters to Samsung and U.S. Senator Al Franken.
U.S. Senator Al Franken, God bless him.
Yep. To, you know, what are you collecting? Why are you collecting it? And make people aware that this information is being collected.
Right. Right. My phone is about as dumb as a stump, so I'm not really worried about that. For my phone. Listen, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. If you're on the line, please stay on the line. If you're not on the line, I don't know why not. Give us a call, 585-966-5299 or 1-800-790-0415. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and poor Mark has been holding on forever. Mark from Greece, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Peachy. What can we do to make you a happier man?
Well, I'm actually going to pass along some information again. As far as BlueStacks, I remember calling you probably a year and a half ago. I had uninstalled it from the computer. And, of course, I use Revo. And good. Then I noticed that their little stacked color blocks that is their icon.
Yeah.
When I looked in Revo, there was a notification center in there that was loaded, and went to uninstall it, and it said it had attached itself to other programs, and that if I uninstalled it, I may lose function, you know, of other programs. So I called you guys, and you said, "Well, leave it alone," and I did. But that's one thing I did not like about that program.
Right, right, right.
You know, after it did that, I never noticed the notification center in my add remove programs before, and after that there was, and then it said it attached itself to something, so I had to leave it alone. So that was one negative about BlueStacks I didn't personally like.
Right, right. No, that makes a lot of sense. Thanks.
So yeah, it's probably... the second thing is she was talking about that Wind Cleaner program. There have been many Wind Cleaner programs over the years I've seen in stores.
Yeah.
You know, they use like a Windex logo on their... advertising. I don't know if that's the same one, but the program I've been using for years and years and years, going all the way back to that dreaded ME, was TuneUp Utilities.
Dave doesn't like TuneUp Utilities.
Well, now it's owned by AVG.
No, ME. He said the bad word.
Yeah.
Oh, dreaded ME. Yeah, that was horrible. I can't count on fingers and toes how many times I got the blue screen of death on that.
Oh yeah, yeah.
On that system, but anyways, we won't digress there.
But yeah, now you know, now owned by AVG, so it's got a better name behind it.
And TuneUp, I've been using it for years and years and years and years. Like I said, all the way back to the early 2000s, and that program has been spectacular for me. I have had no issues with it. I've used the registry cleaner in it for years,
nice.
And years and years, and I've never, ever had a problem with my system.
Yep. One of the problems in general is that there are so many programs with such similar names that it's hard to weed out the good ones from the bad ones.
Right, exactly. That's why I'm passing along a little information there, because I've been using it for the better part of probably almost 14 years now.
Wow.
And I've gone through many upgrades on it, you know. But the problem with that program is you only get so much before you have to rebuy it again to get the future. You'll get the updates while they're in that version, but when they go to a new version, you have to repurchase it.
Yeah, a lot of companies have realized the subscription model lets them make more money.
Yeah. But the program's well worth it, and I get emails from all the time where it's discounted immensely. Like, I can get it for $25 or $30, and which I think is a steal considering all that it does.
Yeah, yeah, sounds like a pretty cool thing.
So if I was going to recommend anything like a wind cleaner to anybody, I would recommend that program.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It looks pretty nice, actually. It's only $40. And
they have a free trial available.
And they have a free trial.
Although that's another big issue we've seen is all these utilities that claim to speed up your computer. And it's a free download. It's a free download. It's a free download. And then it tells you have 2,000 problems, and now give us $50 and we'll fix them.
Well, yeah, they're all free downloads.
You're right. Yeah, that's every download is free.
I've never had to pay for a download.
Yeah.
Right.
So yeah, so it's you have to be very wary about what's real, what's fake, what's a trial, what's actually free. But yeah, this looks pretty nice, and yeah, they have a comparison chart.
Like I said, it's probably been the better part of 14 years with that program, and it weeds out the stuff I want to weed out. I can let it run in the system tray, and it kind of monitors itself, and it does a little background optimization. Doesn't eat up a lot of memory at all, even when it's running in the background. It's fairly light, but I'm not using the AVG version of it. I'm using pre-AVG because I figured, why rebuy it if it was working with 7? So
the version
I had was upgraded to work with Windows 7, so that's the one I'm using.
And what's nice is they are giving you giving a discount to previous TuneUp Utilities owners from before they bought the product. That's really nice of them.
It really is nice of them.
So there you go. A little information for you. Maybe someone might like it too.
Excellent information. So, thanks a lot, Mark.
You're welcome.
You know what's really frustrating is the fact that we need to have these types of utilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but less and less, though, as more folks go to tablets.
Well, these have versions for tablets. The question becomes always, how useful is that on a tablet? But yeah, as people become... Well, this is a problem that, in particular, we're seeing across... for Windows, for Microsoft, it's a big problem because many, many, many more tablets are being sold than PCs these days. And Android is huge in that market. Apple is huge in that market.
And your Chromebook. I mean, for $200-$300 to have a system that does everything that folks want it to do, you just go to Google apps or Docs to use your documents in that, and you can still pass those on to other people.
Yeah,
whether it's a document, a spreadsheet, or whatever, no problem. And, if somebody sends you a Word document or whatever, it can open it.
Right.
No problem.
The big thing that I still do with my desktop, because I just don't have one for this, is burning backups to DVDs.
Yeah.
But these now will scan. You can buy scanners now. With the latest, might just be in dev. It might not be in the standard. Yeah, because there's a regular channel and then the developer's channel. Mm-hmm. So it might just be in dev. But scanning is now available for Chromebooks. So,
And there's been wireless scanners that have been out for a while. And so someone wrote a driver for Chrome?
Yeah, essentially is all... So, or you can plug it into the USB. I mean...
Yeah.
You know, there's none of that you can't do. Same thing with printers and everything else. If you got a wireless printer on your network, your Chromebook can find it and connect to it, and life can be good. Particularly the newer ones. Obviously, on an older one. I was looking back at when I bought my HP LaserJet 1220C, 1220.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm actually embarrassed as to how old it is.
Well,
but it's an HP. It just keeps on running.
We have people every now and then that still have the LaserJet 4.
Yeah.
You know, that's, 20 years old? And it still churns away, and it still churns away.
I can't justify buying a new printer
when
that printer works every single day.
You want me to come over and break it?
Thank you. If I did buy one, I'd want to buy a color laser.
Yeah, color. That's my wish list. Color laser, duplex, automatic duplex, and wireless. HP has these weaselly words on some of their printers. It has manual duplex features.
Well, every printer has manual duplex.
Well, you
print one side, flip it over, print the other side.
It's a little better than that. It'll print every other page. Then you flip it over, and it prints every other page.
Yeah.
But, yeah, semantics. Manual. So you want to make sure it says automatic duplexing.
But that's what I'd really like. If anybody wants to buy me a late Valentine's present, that's what I need. As long as and of course all the toners would have to be. The problem is you're going to spend $500 on toners.
Yeah, that's where right, the machine is always cheap.
Right.
It's on the commodities.
But the laser toner is much less expensive, much more cost effective than liquid ink.
Yes.
And because if you're mostly printing just black. There's a separate black cartridge. It's just like replacing that all the time anyway. And because it's toner, the colors aren't going to dry up if you don't print something in color for a month.
Right.
Brother has won $279 for color, duplex, and wireless.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
The problem we see, though, is these printers have gotten so small that the toner cartridges are really small, too. So they're less...
Full.
So you do end up replacing them more often.
Fewer pages.
We've got an old Apple color laser writer that was $10,000 in the early days.
Right.
The cartridges are $100, but they last for like 7,000 pages.
Right.
Because they're physically so big. But everyone wants physically very small printers. And so they get smaller, and so it does cost a little bit more, but still much better than ink. And the last time I worked it out, the liquid ink in your inkjet printer was like $5,000 a gallon.
Yeah.
Because that $20 cartridge you buy is 2 milliliters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it would take 2,000 of those cartridges to make 1 liter, and then 4 liters in a gallon, mixing our units here. So yeah.
Right. Here's one from HP that's a wireless color printer, but it doesn't say duplex.
A duplex. But
it's only $199.
We have found that the Brother printers are a little bit cheaper than HP printers, and the consumables are a little bit cheaper than HP, but the Brother quality is still very good. Brother made fax machines for, 50 years before someone realized they could make a USB interface, and now it works on your computer, too.
Oops.
What's a fax machine? It's a printer and a scanner and a copier.
Right. And those are nice. The other nice thing about my HP is it is also a scanner.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
One sheet at a time.
Yeah.
But it's a scanner.
Hey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not like you're in a big business that you got to do 200-300 copies.
And everything starts. Almost everything starts as an electronic original these days anyway.
Right.
So it's getting ridiculously cheap to have some of these products.
Yeah. Talking about computers at work, and somebody was coming because they heard that I did the radio and that, and you go back quite a ways, and I go, because they were talking about all the peripherals. I go, well, do you remember going back to the original PC Junior, or the PC, the original PC with dual 5.25 floppies?
Yep.
You didn't have a mouse. And they go, what? How'd you do anything without a mouse? It was a monochrome screen. These are younger people, as you can well gather.
Right.
They didn't have a clue. Well, how'd you do anything? They had to be like the Stone Age. I go, no, we did quite a bit. We programmed it. You could do spreadsheets. Oh, that
Which
had
is
to
kind
be
of funny
weird.
Because the mouse was invented in the 60s.
Xerox.
Doug Uglenbart.
What I remember most about the PC Junior is Chuck, who was the manager of the computer center where I work when we were on Main Street, wanted to see how far he could
with the
little chiclet keyboard.
Chiclet keyboard, yeah.
So right in the middle of the day, he grabs a keyboard, he puts the PC Junior in the window, and runs out and stands in the middle of Main Street typing. It worked, but I kept telling him, this is not the best
safest,
way
yeah, play this. Test yeah, it out, yeah.
Well, when the wireless keyboards first started getting popular, we would switch the positions in front of the computers. So someone would come down and start typing, and nothing happened on their screen.
I took a class on the PC Junior when we went to sell them, right? Mm-hmm. And I was in the back row, and we learned how to do music, and we learned how to do all this other stuff. And I realized very quickly that all the keyboards were all the same frequency.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when the guy got really boring, I'd point my keyboard at somebody else's computer a couple of rows up and start playing music on their machine. And the guy would get really, really angry. And the person sitting at that desk go, wasn't me. I didn't have anything to do with it. And I'd just be sitting there, my keyboard back in place.
Computer has a mind of its own.
Quietly sitting there. But other than that, that was one of my favorite classes ever. We're going to go quickly to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Greece, New York. We got about 2 minutes. What's up, Tom?
Hi. I was going to ask Steve about if he had any highlights about what's that thing you do on Wednesday at East High? What is that?
Apple Cider Users
something?
Group, yeah.
Do you have any highlights? You had some guy come in there, because I couldn't make it, about dealing with the cable company.
Yeah, we had Phil Dempier from StopTheCap.com talking about issues in the cable industry and how to cut your cable TV bill. We have the meeting video is live online at applecider.org down the right hand side. One of the big things he said was a tweet that my cable bill's too high. I want to give it up and make sure you put hashtag TWC for Time Warner Cable. And you may get a phone call from them offering you a better deal. And give them a call and ask how you can lower your cable bill, and you may get a better deal. If you look at the Time Warner deal pages now, they've got a triple play phone, internet, and television for $90, which is about half of what most people pay for the same services. But it's technically only available to new subscribers. But if you complain and you have to be really serious about threatening to quit. Oftentimes you can get those kind of deals yourself as well. In fact, they mentioned...
But you have to be willing to quit, because they might just say, go ahead and quit.
Yeah. He had an article recently and talked a bit about Greenlight, a lot of people switching to Greenlight as it's coming to their neighborhood for high-speed internet. And...
I love my Greenlight.
Apparently, Time Warner is offering people even better deals on their Time Warner package, because Greenlight is only internet. So you still need to have television, if you want, television and phone from other services. And so Time Warner is giving even better deals if you say you're switching to Greenlight. And a lot of people now are watching television over the internet, using voice over IP for telephone over the internet, or even a cell phone and not bothering a landline anyway. But yeah, the meeting video is available online, and really good stuff came out of it.
Okay, sounds good. All right, thanks. You also said which.
All right, Dave is making gestures that I do not understand. So I think we have to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Stay on the line. We'll talk to you again on the other end of this. Soundbites member supported Jazz 90.1. I'm not sure.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966 Jazz. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And you're 5 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites, and do we still have Tom from Greece? No, apparently we do not. Okay.
Hang on. Yeah. I kept him down.
Yeah, for those of you that like the physical meeting space, Apple Cider Users Group for Apple users, Mac and iPads and iPhones, second Tuesday of the month at East High. And for Windows and PC groups, there's the... Rochester Computer Society. I kept saying PC Cubed. No, it's the Rochester Computer Society now.
RCSI.
And they generally meet the second Tuesday of the month, different locations.
Check to call them. That's on my list, and I just haven't gotten to it yet. It's my fault. It's a five-minute phone call. You think I'd just make it? All right. But here's an interesting thing. In 2013, Google expanded its Hangouts video conferencing service into a commerce platform called Helpouts, where people buy and sell services like cooking and technical advice via live video. Well, that's shutting down. Hangouts is Helpouts is shutting down. But Google is developing another new service based on the Hangouts infrastructure. It's running a live video chat service for would-be buyers of Google smartphones, tablets, and Chromebooks, but not Nest products, yet at least, to ask Google device experts questions and chat about the products before sealing the deal. And unlike Helpouts, this service is free. We're always improving features to help our users, said a spokesrobot. We're in a limited trial of an experimental support feature and gathering feedback, so we aren't ready to share full plans yet. Could they have weaseled it any farther? We're in a limited trial of an experimental support feature and gathering feedback. The service, which went live quietly way back in November, is initially being run as a test through the device's channel of Google Play. But Google wants to expand the service and extend the idea to more places, both virtual and physical. They're also planning to go into retail stores with a virtual help desk to enhance the shopping experience, a source says, who described the bigger project as Google's virtual genius bar. It's not clear yet how far along Google is in implementing this concept of a virtual help desk in retail locations. It also bears a resemblance to Amazon's Mayday service, the company's tech support system introduced in 2013 that currently works only on the Kindle Fire HDX, Kindle Fire 8DX, HDX 8.9, Fire HDX 8.9, and Fire Phone devices, cheese and crackers, and in a limited number of countries. Unlike Mayday, Google's Video Helper currently does not cover straight tech support. The feature for now is only live between 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. Pacific time, and to get to it, you navigate through the online Apple Play Store to the devices category. There you select the help icon in the upper right corner, and if you indicate you're interested in buying a device, you are given the option of making a video call to ask more questions. So would this service help you decide to buy a new Google device? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, a lot of people like that little Amazon help thing they have on some of the Fires where the live person will pop up and help you. There's been some interesting stories about what people have asked them to do.
Yeah, I'm sure.
They have nothing to do with the Amazon product, but the...
Right.
There was one where a nice one where a guy was proposing to his girlfriend and had the Amazon help lady do it along with him on screen.
Yeah. But if you go to the Google, if you go to Google Play, which is play.google.com, and click on the devices part of the menu on the upper left, you'll see. You know, you can go by the Google Nexus. Which I have, and I absolutely love the little hockey puck that goes on television. Google Play. Google Player? Nexus Player.
Player, yeah.
Nexus Player. They're all the same. Yeah, you just can't get the names. And the various Android watches. I really want a Moto 360. I really want a Moto 360. I really want a Moto 360.
What do you want?
Moto 360. I don't know if you noticed that. And then Chromebooks, of course, you can buy various kinds of Chromebooks and all kinds of accessories like keyboard folios and covers and whatever. But in the upper left is a little speech balloon with a question mark in it, and that's help. And if you click on that, you have the option of getting live help from an actual human being in a Hangout. It's very, very cool, actually. Not right now because it's not 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. Pacific time, Monday through Friday, but basically same idea. And I think it's actually a pretty clever thing to be able to get that kind of help. I mean, it's the kind of help you've been able to get at a Genius Bar for a long time, but you don't have to go anywhere. They come to you in your home, which is a very nice thing, actually. So.
And, of course, the bad guys have figured that out, too. So there's been a lot of fake ads that will pop up on screens and say, chat with us or let us remote into your computer. We'll fix the problem. Be
right.
Very, very wary of those. Mm-hmm. You never know if they're a good guy or not.
Right. The good guys never call you.
Yeah. Microsoft will never,
ever call you. But in this thing, you have to actually initiate. You're on the Google website. You look up and it says play.google.com and nothing else. And you see the thing and you initiate the call and they'll chat with you, but they're not going to take over your machine because there's nothing to do on your machine. If you're saying, I want to buy a Chromebook, They're not going to say, let me take over your machine and make it look like a Chromebook. That's right. Not going to happen.
And if you get a virus warning message from a program you don't own, mm-hmm. don't trust it.
Yeah, exactly. Or if you're on a Mac or Linux yeah. or whatever, and you get a pop-up that says Windows has detected an error, just move on.
Yeah. Yep.
I saw like when Steve's back there got that notice.
Yeah.
It's like, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I've gotten that
Microsoft
on my
is
iPad.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, my iPad has popped up and said there's a virus, a Windows virus on my iPad.
Yep. Well, I told you, I once set up a brand new Linux box. Brand new. I mean, this was, the IP address had never been used before. It was a whole new machine. I went and looked in the log, and the very first entry was somebody trying to break in using a Windows exploit, so it was doomed to failure anyway. But that's, you know, those things can happen.
But actually, that was an interesting question I heard on Security Now a little bit ago. Someone was asking about, they had a program that has to run in XP. So is it okay to run XP in a virtual machine on my real computer as long as I don't give it access to the internet? Just install a version XP and just run it. And the shocking first answer was no. You should install all the service packs first. Then disconnect
yes.
from the internet.
Yes.
Because there's Code Red and Nimda and, mm-hmm. and all of these malware that existed for the early machines are yeah. still running around the internet. And if you install a fresh install of pretty much any OS, I just did a fresh install of Windows 7 for a customer, 177 patches came in.
Mm-hmm.
You must install all those patches.
Yep.
Yeah.
Then lock it down from the internet and don't let anything in to run your program that requires XP. But very careful.
Yep, I have a Windows laptop that I bought strictly to teach courses at RIT. So I'm not using it right now because I'm not teaching anything this semester. But once a month, I faithfully plug it in, boot it up, run all the installs while mm-hmm. I'm watching television, then yep. shut it all down, put it away again.
And you're good to go.
And I'm good to go. Because when I want it, I don't want to have to install 250 updates.
And some of them can take some time.
Exactly. And I don't care because I'm just watching TV yeah. while I'm doing it. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I can do it in the background. When it finishes, it finishes.
Right.
No big deal. That's why I tell folks, you know, running the scans and that on their computers. I've told countless folks, you know, just start the scan, turn off the monitor at night, and in the morning it'll be done.
Yep.
You can schedule another one. Yeah. Well, machine's running. Yeah, so what? It doesn't, you know, it's what gets a machine is the wear and tear, is the turning on and turning off of a computer.
Those heating and cooling cycles.
Yeah. You know, mine are on 24/7. The only thing I do is turn off the monitors. And yep. I've done that for decades.
The one thing to be wary about is the really cheap PCs are generally built with really cheap components,
mm-hmm.
and they often don't like that 24/7 run. So turn it on in the morning, turn it off at night. Don't, you know, maybe not let it run all the time overnight because it will wear out faster. Although it's a $200 computer, if it wears out in a year, you know, you throw it away and buy a new one.
Right.
And you'll get a better one for $200.
Right.
That's the problem with computers
that
are too
sad?
Cheap.
You know, I mean, yep. again, going back to the old days, when folks spent $3,000 just for an original PC with 2 5-and-a-quarter floppies, 64K of memory.
Yep. Yep.
$2,000, and that was with a monochrome monitor and keyboard.
Look, you do not mention those because I once had an Apple II, 2 floppies, green screen, thermal printer, 64 full K,
mm-hmm.
CPM card, and I looked at my wife and said, "That's it. I will never need another thing."
Yep.
She reminds me of that to this day.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I started first program computer that I actually did physical programming on was an old Trash 80 with an eight inch floppy. So they're doing creating, you know, the code for a download program.
Yep.
Because that's what we had in the lab at the time. And, cool. So I was sitting there writing it in BASIC.
Yep.
And loaded it up on an old Trash 80. But that was a cool thing because then we had the old phone coupler. And then we could dial in. And That's going back.
Screech.
Yeah.
Yeah, I used to have, I wrote my own terminal program in Forth. And then with my 300 baud modem, then my 1200 baud modem, it still worked fine. And then I got real angry because when I got my 2400 baud modem, stuff scrolled on the screen too fast to read everything. Yep. So I had to rewrite the whole program to save stuff to disk so I could go back and read it later. I was so angry. But Linux, you know, we were talking about having to reboot regularly. Linux is the folks at Linux, Linus Torvalds, those people, are working at no downtime kernel patching.
Wow.
You will never have to reboot, ever.
That's rough.
Yeah.
How do you update the piece of the program you're actually using right now
without quitting it? They figured it out. You can actually do it with K-splice and K-patch and things like that, just only on very certain specific versions of Linux, and they're going to generalize it and make everybody able to do it. It's very cool. Very cool idea. Never reboot again. All right, our next caller is James from Rochester, New York. Welcome, James. What's up?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, all of a sudden, you know that sound on a laptop when you put hardware in, like that blip sound, or take it out, like on a USB mouse?
Yeah.
My laptop is making the noise when I'm not ejecting or putting anything in. How do you stop that?
Check the pins on the sockets on your computer to see if something is bent and shorting. Maybe it thinks you're putting it in.
Which pin?
All of them.
Yeah, on the USB.
What do you have plugged in USB right now?
The mouse. That's it. The wireless mouse. That's what it is.
Okay, if that's the only thing you have plugged in.
Yeah, well, that plus the cord to go the wall socket, the electric cord.
Right. But we're talking about USB right now, right?
Yeah, USB, the only thing is the mouse.
Okay, and this is a laptop?
Laptop, Toshiba.
Okay, and it has a touchpad on the front, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Do me a favor.
Yeah.
Unplug the mouse and use the touchpad on the keyboard and see if that sound stops. That will tell us if the problem is actually in the mouse dongle itself. Right? So it may be that it's something as simple as your mouse needs to be recharged or a new battery put in, and it's losing the connection because the battery is weak. It could be that there's something shorting out, as Steve and Dave said, because something has gone wrong with it. One of the things we find with those little... Is this one of those wireless mice with a little USB nub that fits in?
Or is the whole mouse have the wire connected right to the mouse and then plug that into the keyboard?
Hello?
Hello, James?
Must have lost him.
We lost James.
We didn't.
No, I don't know what happened.
Oh,
some. I don't know. I don't know what's happening. I don't know what's happening. But are we taking a? Okay, that's fine.
All right, hold that.
It's sometimes crazy things happen, even to us.
James, is that you?
Yes, we got disconnected somehow.
All right, here's the thing. What I want you to do, is this a wireless mouse?
Yes.
Okay, so it's got that little USB nub that you put in?
Yes.
Okay, we often find is that those nubs get knocked around a little bit.
Yeah, okay.
Right? So do me a favor, unplug the USB mouse entirely and just use the mouse pad that's on the laptop itself.
Okay.
And, and see if the sound goes away. That will tell you if it's the mouse.
So I probably need a new mouse setup.
Well, you may just need a new battery. I don't know if the thing is just, you know, the battery's weak and so it keeps disconnecting.
Uh-huh.
So that's something else to try. But let's start with disconnecting it and seeing what happens.
Okay, and then if not, I'll go buy a new mouse with the little stub.
That's probably the next thing to try.
Yeah,
if the thing is fine without that.
When I'm using it, like on a non flat surface, it's making the noises in there.
Sure.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple.
I don't know what it was.
Okay, thank you. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, Soundbites, member supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 26 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Paul from Brighton on the line. Mm-hmm. Yes, we do. Hiya, Paul. What's up?
Hi. I've got malware bytes, anti-malware running.
Right.
I've got a premium license. And I guess they did an update recently, but it comes up now on the main dashboard where it says database version. It says it's unable to access the update server, and I don't know why.
And you can get to the internet okay on, yes, on your web browser? Okay.
Yes. Huh. It does scan, so it does the scan, you know, regularly with the existing database.
What if you go right into the program and say, click on the update within,
yes,
the program?
That's what I did, and when I do that, it comes up with this unable to access the update server. If I just reboot the computer and bring up the dashboard, that line where it says database version simply says updating in progress. But then,
right,
when I go ahead and click the update link, it comes back with unable to access update server.
Hmm.
Okay. That happens, and I know. And what version number are you on?
Is
it 201?
Yeah, let me just go to, it gives me, let's see, got the identifier here under the, where it says my account. Where would the actual version be?
It should be on the list that shows the database status in the dashboard itself.
The only place to click on that line is where it says update now, and it just... anything.
Yeah, it could be that, you know, something broke.
Let me just click on about here under the settings, and what does it say? Just where it says build data, it doesn't even have anything, just blank.
Yeah, I'm seeing some things in the Malware Bytes forums to try to uninstall, download the latest version and reinstall.
Yeah, there's a thing called MBAM clean. Malware Bytes, anti-malware, MBAM, MBAM,
okay,
clean, and that will remove. Or do a clean upgrade, so you can. Because what seems to happen to some people is the in the upgrade process, the database gets corrupted. And it can't get there, so the best bet is to remove it.
And then reinstall
it. Yeah.
Okay, well, I've got the license key, so that should be enough.
Perfect. As long as you save that, you should be okay.
Yeah. Give it a try. Thanks very much.
Yeah, let us know.
And that's a big thing to keep aware of with any of your antivirus and anti-malware tools, is to make sure it's up to date. It can be scanning, fine, but if your virus definition database is 3 years old, it's not doing you any good. A lot of new PCs will come with a free trial. We're back to our free trials again, of Norton, McAfee, or some other other program, and that trial expires, and then it stops updating, and then your scans are virtually worthless because you're not scanning for the recent threats, so it doesn't check anything new.
Right, and as Paul did so cleverly, make sure you save your license keys when you get one. Save them. Keep them in a safe place, both online, so you can cut and paste.
Write them down.
Copy and paste, and write them down separately. Back to the phones. Our next caller is George from Greece, New York. Welcome, George. What's up?
I hear a lot about cybersecurity.
Yeah.
Can you give me a little background? Give me a primer.
Cybersecurity is, in fact, part of what we were just talking about. It's keeping yourself safe online. It scans the gamut from antivirus stuff all the way up to don't give people passwords or credit card numbers or any of that other stuff. So it's a little bit of everything, and it's keeping yourself safe. Just like at home, you don't walk down certain streets with $20 bills hanging out of your pockets.
Unless you know
you
the
lock
shout.
Your doors at right. you lock your doors at night, et cetera, et cetera. There's a whole bunch of things you do to keep yourself safe. Cybersecurity is the same thing. There's a whole bunch of things you do. Some of them are technical and have software or hardware involved with them. But some of them are just common sense. Don't give people certain information.
So I relate to that, having listened to you fellows for a few years now, down at the kind of the individual level. But what I'm puzzled over is where there's professionals and corporations and nation to nation.
Sure.
How is this happening?
Well, the deal is this. There used to be, well, you've seen movies and TV shows and newspaper articles about espionage, where somebody comes into a company and sabotages it or steals their secrets or whatever. Well, all of that stuff is now online. So if your target, for example, and you've got a billion and a half credit card numbers online, wouldn't those be great to steal?
Or Home Depot or Sears or you know, any
Sears or any of them. Yeah, it
doesn't MasterCard, have to be Visa, right, anybody, right. Yeah.
So they will try to break into your computers and steal those. So if you want to keep that those data safe, if you want to keep that information safe, then you want to use cybersecurity techniques to prevent people from breaking in.
So they're going to try to break in pretending they are an employee and be able to get past the security perimeter.
Sometimes an employee, sometimes whatever they can be.
But they're going to try to get access then to this large amount of data.
And sometimes it's an email attack. We call those phishing attacks, where and there have been several very noted email attacks where someone got an email saying, here's the latest HR benefits package, open this file. And it was a fake message with a virus in the file, and now that company's security has been compromised by a virus on that individual computer in the company.
Once I can get into any one machine, I've now got a backdoor into that machine, and I can get anywhere that person has clearance and spread to other machines until I finally get to somebody with a lot of clearance.
And the bad guys will also target individual users with just a general virus like that as a level of anonymity. So it's your computer hacking into Home Depot. It's not the bad guy.
Right. So you have to be as careful about your home machine as companies have to be about their business machines.
I think I understand the home situation, but what Steve was just describing was that it takes an act by somebody to respond to something in order for the hacker
almost always
to have access.
Although that's getting to be another issue in that there are malicious ads. Malvertiser was a new word I heard the other day. A malicious advertiser.
Mm-hmm.
So someone in a company goes to Facebook and there's a malicious ad. It can run code just by displaying that website. You don't have to click anything. It just runs. And in the home community and even in business, an ad can say, you're infected, call this phone number and we'll fix your problem. And it's fake, and it's designed to steal credit card information. But if they happen to be inside a company, then now they have access to that company's information as well.
So I'm not a Facebook user, but I have learned a little about it. If I go to Facebook, but then don't click on anything, does Facebook know that I've been there?
Yeah.
And they have a record of that?
Sure they do. Anybody who logs into a Facebook account, that information is kept. That's true of any machine you log into. When you log into Google for Gmail or whatever, that's
virtually any program. That's history.
And even without logging in, they know a computer with a specific address went to their website. And there are ways to trace that back down as to who the ISP was, and then you can go to the ISP and find out who was assigned that address. That was real popular during the RIAA suing file-sharing people. That we can track down to this
Jammy Thomas in New York City because her daughter downloaded a song because that specific computer was able to be traced. And then they were able to tie that to a person's name through the internet provider.
But in the case you just described, the person downloaded something. They committed an act to pull in some information.
Right. When you go to a website, your computer downloads a whole bunch of stuff to display that website on your screen.
Okay.
And some of that could be malicious.
And quite often, the bad guys will target big sites like Facebook. We had a customer get hit on a Walmart website because those are big targets. And Facebook's internal security divisions will probably find that problem in an hour, maybe two. But in that hour, a million people might have got hit by it. And so the bad guys know to target huge websites like that because they can get a lot of people and very easily catch one or two of them. In fact, we used to joke about direct mail, physical postal direct mail, that a 1% return rate was considered good and profitable.
Right.
With the viruses and malware virtually having zero cost to create, one response, not 1%, one response, and you've made your money back. And if you can send out a million messages and get, 5, 10, 15, and convince these people to pay you the $300 to fix the problem that doesn't exist, there's real money being made by these bad guys. And so that's becoming the bigger threat now, is actually trying to steal money or get into businesses with credit card information and then either use those credit card numbers to buy stuff yourself or sell them to other bad guys.
So President Obama just convened a group. And he says, you guys aren't paying attention. Why wouldn't they be interested in pursuing this? Why does he have to convince them they ought to pay attention?
Well, a lot of them are paying attention to some stuff, but a lot of them aren't paying attention to the right stuff. Here's the problem. For most cybersecurity people, they have the same problem that the United States Armed Forces has. They spend their time preparing to fight the last war.
Okay.
And the bad guys are all up on new techniques that the cyber security people are not up on. So it's not when he says they're not paying attention, they're paying attention, but to the wrong stuff.
Well, you said they aren't talking about it. That's worse than not paying attention.
Well, the companies don't want to admit they had a problem.
No, he's talking about in the boardroom. He's not talking about in front of the TV camera.
Right.
Right, right. And that's true, too. A lot of places don't talk about it much at all, partially because it's so obscure. Most people who are running companies are, my age and don't know much of anything about computers.
Well, yeah, but they hire people that are supposed to know about it.
But then they don't listen to them.
Huh?
But then they don't listen to them.
Well, somehow this threat seems to be great enough for Sony, for Target, I would think they must be listening to somebody.
We're going to have to spend $10 million beefing up our security. What's my return on investment? Zero. You don't get any money back. You just have to spend $10 million to stop money getting lost. And and that becomes a problem for the higher-ups in the corporation.
Right.
Okay.
And a lot of it isn't intentional on Sony or Target or Home Depot. Somebody made a mistake somewhere. The bad guy figured out that mistake and was able to exploit it. There are conferences. We have the white hats and the black hats. We have conferences where security people get together, talk about things they found, and share information on how to stop the new threats. But the bad guys always seem to be one step ahead of thinking up new ways that the good guys didn't think of to block.
Right.
Uh-huh.
So, there's a whole lot of that's going on. And there's nothing you can do except fight it every single day. And that costs money. In fact, it costs a lot of money. And people are reluctant to spend that money. And in the time it takes you to finally decide you should spend that money, you've been hit 50 times.
Uh-huh. Okay.
All right, we got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1, turn your radio down. 2, Turn your radio down lower. Three, remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. Four, make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. Five, calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. Six, if you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And seven, is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Endre.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Andy from Greece on the line. Andy, what's up?
Hey, Nick. How's it going?
Peachy, how are you?
Oh, trying to dig out the driveway, but so is everybody else.
Yeah.
Got a quick follow-up. Got a Chromebook for Christmas and am enjoying it immensely.
Good for you.
It's just nice to be anywhere in the house and, you know, get online quick and take care of things.
Exactly.
But now back to the dinosaur computer. I built one back in March to upgrade to Windows 7, put a 125-gigabyte solid-state drive in it, and that is used only for Windows. Got 7 Pro on the box. Got a terabyte hard drive, takes care of programs, data, etc. When I first loaded Windows 7, it took up about 50% of that 125-gigabyte drive. Now, here we are coming up on a year, and I'm now at 75% of that 125-gigabyte drive.
Yep.
The only thing going in there is Windows and Windows Update.
Yep.
Nothing else. Everything
yep.
else is routed out to the D or E drives.
Yep.
There's also log files that Windows keeps, and lots of what we were just talking about, the event viewer during the commercial there.
Temp files.
Temp files, yeah. There's a program called TreeSize, and they have a free version called TreeSize Free, that will scan all of your folders and show you where the space is being used. You could do a properties on every single folder and see which ones are big, but that's annoying. So TreeSize allows you to sort your folders by size, and you'll probably notice that a lot of the temp directories are full of stuff. I had a customer the other day had 300,000 files in his temp directory. Most of them were 0K, but each directory entry takes up 4K of allocation space, so his hard drive was full. And deleting those temp files and deleting the Windows Update files can help free up the space. You can do a lot of that also with disk cleanup. We'll scan through and find the temp files it knows about and the Windows updates that are there so you can uninstall them if you need to. They can generally be uninstalled after a few weeks that you know they're working.
Okay, I did run the disk cleanup the other night. And it said it found all this stuff and said it got rid of it. The amount of space it freed up was negligible.
Yeah, a lot of times the temp files are things that it doesn't know about. The whole point of a temp file is that a program uses it temporarily while it's doing something. And then it's supposed to delete the temp file when it's done. And a lot of programs don't do that very well.
And then,
so just look for anything star.tmp?
Right.
Not always, no.
Right, but they'll be in your temp directory.
Okay.
And that's either TMP or TEMP.
Okay.
Office is notorious for that. Also, if you look on your hard drive, you'll see a bunch of files that start with KB. Those are generally update files. So when you do a Windows update, you might have 10 or 20 or 30 of those, and they'll have KB numbers. That's the knowledge base number. Disk cleanup won't remove those because if you remove them, you cannot roll back the update. But if you're happy with the update and you don't ever intend to roll back the update, then you can get rid of all those KB files.
Okay, so it starts KB and then a number.
Yeah.
And what's the extension on it?
I don't remember.
Oh.
But you'll see them. They're
all
the
same. Start KB. They're a long number.
Yep.
Okay. So look for KB star dot star and.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if you run a program like TreeSize to find your folder sizes, make sure you run as administrator so it can look inside all of the Windows support files that the normal searches don't look in.
Good point.
Okay. I mean, I expected some growth just because of all the updates Windows is always throwing out, but I didn't think I'd chew up 125 gigabytes of hard. I mean, my last hard drive was only 40 gigabytes.
Well, it's all, if that, is that your C drive?
Yeah.
Well, then also likely your swap space is there as well.
Yeah.
How much RAM do you have?
16 gigabytes.
You probably aren't using much of your swap space. But you'll be amazed at how many temp files you'll find. Honestly, Windows does a great job of creating them and a terrible job of deleting them.
Yeah.
Mostly Office there might be, products.
I go, like Steve was suggesting, that other tree program. You might have some other stuff that maybe inadvertently got saved there that you're unaware of. But run that program just to do some homework, just to see, because that does sound like a lot, 125 gig right. for Windows.
Most places,
or runaway log files.
Yeah,
so you runaway log files, absolutely. The other thing is you'll often find that while the majority of programs will you know, you can set default locations for things.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of programs will honor that. Some will not. And it depends what your program is. Also, if you're using a program like Quicken, Intuit, anything. Often they save the files not in your documents directory, but in their own directory, which they create on the C drive. So if you've got, for example, and it may not, you may not, but...
I don't use any of Quicken or Intuit, anything.
Right, but if...
Programs that I do use, I have routed out to... the E drive, which is the data drive, and that's partitioned because it makes it easier for backup purposes.
Right.
So all the default file locations are. Anytime I install something, the first thing I do is go in and find where it thinks it wants to put files and change that.
All right, but check that out anyway.
No, I'll look for it.
Use the tree program.
Suggestions, and I'm jotting them down as we go here because right. I just, you know, I was kind of surprised that it chewed up half the hard drive just to install it because that's. Like I said, that's bigger than my last hard drive, for Pete's sakes.
Yep.
And now it's gained another 25% of the total disk space in miscellaneous files in a year. And it's like, yeah, I know there's a lot of updates.
Is this
here,
a laptop or a desktop?
It's a desktop.
Okay.
I joke, it's my dinosaur computer. It's a power unit, but when I built it, I put the solid-state drive in it so I could get the faster hard boot times, and it does. I mean, 10 seconds from start to finish, I'm up and running,
yep.
And that's fast, and I like it, but I put the full terabyte drive behind it so I had room for programs and data, and I made a couple large partitions, and, you know, the C is the SSD drive with Windows, and everything else program-wise, I force it into D. And that's worked so far. I mean, I think there was one small program I couldn't get to go anywhere but in C, but it only took up 3-4 megabytes. So it really didn't chew up an awful lot on 125 gig hard drive space.
Right.
You know, I've picked up 25 gigabytes of garbage that I didn't put there.
Yep. No, and I agree with you. I understand your frustration, but it's going to take a little detective work. Start with the tree size program.
Okay.
And see where that takes you. Sometimes you'll find I suspect you'll be amazed at what's in your temp directories.
Okay, if the swap file has gotten larger than I want it to, isn't there a way to put the swap file out in another drive?
There is. You're using Windows 7
Pro,
but I would leave it on the SSD for speed.
Yeah.
Usually you put your swap file on a different drive than your OS to make it faster so it can access the two drives at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But I would guess that having it on an SSD would be faster than putting it on a separate
mm-hmm.
HD.
Okay. But as you pointed out, with 16 gigabytes of RAM, I'm not probably using a swap file too much.
No, it's pretty unlikely, but I would check it anyway. And if you do want to move it, then you want to go to advanced system settings, which you can just do by going to the start box and type advanced system settings.
Mm-hmm.
And the control panel applet will let you open it up and view advanced system settings, right? And under the advanced tab, in the performance section, you click settings. Then there's another advanced tab. And in the virtual memory.
This is a pretty advanced feature.
Yeah, it's pretty advanced. you would check change, and then you can change where that
is located.
File goes.
Okay. Well, you've given me something to chew on, and while we're watching the snowbanks pile up, maybe I'll have time to sit there and work on the computer.
There you go.
Thank you very much for your time.
Good luck.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, I had a customer. It was a little ironic and a bit frustrating that the first call is the hard drive was full. And found out he had a 320 hard drive, and whoever set it up made a 64 gig C partition, and it was full. There was a 64.
Well, duh.
There was a 64 gig D partition, same drive but a different partition that his swap file was on, only his swap file. The rest of it was empty, and then there was 150 gig unallocated space. So I fixed all that, and now he has 320 gigabyte hard drive like he had originally in the computer to begin with. Then a week later, it's full again, and this time it's the 300,000 temp files that got generated when we put in into it, and that was eating up 150 gigabytes of allocation space,
right?
Even though the actual file size was near zero, but each file had allocation to it.
Well, and that's the difference between how much disk space you have taken up and how much the disk is being used.
Right.
Right? Because you can have a zero size file, but it still allocates four sectors.
Yep. You often can see that when you do a properties on a file, or on the Macintosh, you do get info on the file. There's two numbers. There's the actual number of bytes, and then there's the megabytes, you know, kilobytes or whatever. And that, if you have an extremely small file, you have a text file with one character in it. Well, that only takes up one byte, but you'll see it on your drive. It's probably 4K,
yep,
because that's the minimum size a file can be. And so when you're 4K plus one byte, now it's 8K.
Right. That's exactly right. All right. We're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to those of you to whom we did not get. Use the Chicago method of calling next week. Call earlier and more often. I want to remind you, however, not to go away, because Michael's coming in to run the board, which is a good thing, and he's dragging along with him George, who will play the best German music you will hear all week. So don't miss that. We'll be back in 166 hours with a whole lot more of Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Thanks for listening.